Good afternoon, Tucson. You're listening to the Buckmaster Show here on KVOI 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Sitting in for Bill, I'm Paul Ingram from the Tucson Sentinel, and joining me here in the studio with me is Jim Nitzel, one of the best political reporters around. And we're going to be speaking with Dr. Matt Heinz, the Pima County Supervisor for District 2. He's going to be on the phone with us, and we're backed by producer Tom Fairbanks. And we'll be digging into a few issues today in Pima County and the region. We're going to talk about, I think, RTA and Project Blue. Hey, Matt, are you on the phone with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Sounds great.
Perfect.
So, you know, I think we've talked a lot about this, these two issues this summer, but I think it's still really important. We wanted to start with Project Blue, especially how the Pima County Supervisors was kind of involved in the early vote. And one thing I thought was interesting is after the vote, you really asked for kind of a redo. Can you tell us more about why you wanted to do that, what happened there, and how that kind of how that went through?
All right. Well, it turns out it wasn't legal because the board policy with regard to approval of contracts and supporting policy that would, of course, be required by that contract can't really be reconsidered because it puts us in a liability situation legally. But the reason why I was not real happy with how that particular vote went down. I mean, I supported it. It was a divided vote, 3-2. Mm-hmm. And I stand by that. But the fact that we had heard, and many people had heard from, I had heard from representatives from Tucson Electric Power, that at that very meeting in the hearing about, hey, you know, any expenses with regard to grid expansion for the project to come online will be, those expenses will all be borne by by the development team and not, you know, the residential ratepayers will not be, or the commercial ratepayers will not be subject to that. It just, even though that's correct, that having TEP come out with in the same afternoon before the meeting gets gavel shut, a 14% rate hike request going to the Corporation Commission, which of course has been in, that's been in process for probably 16, 18 months or something. That's just, it's retrospective, not looking forward, right?
Right, yeah. TEP saying we need to cover the infrastructure we already bought, we already purchased or installed.
Right, yes, but people don't, like, people look at temporal relationships, right? Mm-hmm. So people are looking at what we're voting on. They heard what TEP said to the board and to the people who were there at that hearing. Don't worry, there'll be no rate hikes related to this project. And then within minutes of us voting on this, there's a public statement, like, incredibly poor timing from TEP saying, hey, we're going in for a 14% rate hike. So what prompted the redo was because I felt that the people especially needed some time to be able to make their opinions known about this, because they're very understandable feeling that there was some relationship, even though there was not.
So you really wanted to separate the timing of that, or did you really think that the TEP rate hike was a problem? Okay.
Oh, independently of the timing, which is just incredibly stupid, the amount of that hike is, I think, is very concerning. And I believe Chris Mays, our attorney general, is looking into an APS requested rate hike for 15%, if I'm not mistaken. And she has come out with some public statements as to that. So I think, as a representative of 220,000 people in District 2 and on the county board, I think it's important that the county do everything it can to try to mitigate that. You know, does it have to be 14% all at once? Can it be over? Can we divide that up a bit? Can we do these annual instead of every 3 years, so it's not quite as big of a hit? But just, you know, I want the county, and we're in the process of becoming an intervener in these rate hike cases. So, you know, if you're at the table, you're not on the table kind of situation. Mm-hmm. I want the county government to be at the table for this conversation with the Corporation Commission, for example, so that maybe we can try to mitigate this to some effect.
What would that look like? What would it look like if the Pima County was an intervener? I mean, would you actually oppose the rate hike, or how would that work?
Well, look, I can't say that I would like more information, and I would like to do what we can to try to make it maybe not as high of a rate hike. So I do oppose a 14% rate hike all at once. I think people are really stressed right now. aside from the stock market, which seems to be doing well, people are not feeling like things are going well. The job market's starting to kind of get weaker, and people are uncertain. And we have tariffs, or we don't have tariffs on any number of countries or sectors at this point, and I can't even track it anymore. So people are not feeling real secure about their own personal economic conditions. And so a 14% rate hike, even though it is based on previous investments, I think it'd be great if we could be an intervener to try to space that out a bit to reduce the immediate impact on residents.
Matt, Jim Mintzel here. I'm wondering, you did vote in favor of the Project Blue project. And then
I'm reminded by the Instagram people.
Yes. and the city council, of course, later voted to end negotiations with the developers. What was it that you thought was positive about the project and why you voted for it?
Yeah, thank you for that question. And look, this was driven, this process behind the scenes was driven by, in part, the mayor's office and her staff and the city manager. They knew about this project way before I had any idea about this. So I think it's still a little puzzled that this not getting an up or down vote at the city council and being killed in a study session, because this was something that the mayor and her team were really working hard to bring about. So to like, anyway, that's not what you asked me. But what I found, and I will also say the non-disclosure stuff, incredibly frustrating. Like not even knowing I was subject to a non-disclosure agreement, which of course severely impacted my ability to speak publicly about any aspect of the project, let alone the more affirming positive ones. That was very frustrating, I think. So but I sat down with the development team approximately 1 month before that June, whatever, 17th meeting, and was very impressed. From the outset, I had, I think it was 8 or 9 people in the room, some from the financial backers and then mostly from their team. They have on staff a water expert, Christina, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so she was there to really, and not like some you know, half-assed sort of consultant situation just to kind of put like, just to make it look like we're, no. I mean, this is a person with really impressive credentials who made it very clear from the very first sentence that this development team was looking at some of the really important priorities that we all share for Southern Arizona, and that is environmental stewardship, protecting our scarce resources, especially water and energy, and making sure that, you know, we're doing what is it makes sense economically, but also respects our environment and makes sure to preserve it for our families and children. So the fact that they were looking at the 18-mile reclaimed water pipeline becoming on paper water positive, possibly eventually even charging the aquifer in year 5 or beyond from the project. That's the kind of stuff I love. That I love the fact that a development team came to this area and aligned their proposal with these really important stewardship goals, I think, for myself and for the board and the the council. So, but that story didn't really get out there, did it? Because we couldn't, I did violate the NDA several times because I spoke to Tony Davis at the Star about this. And then I got a call saying, hey, we like your comments, but you really shouldn't be making them because there's an NDA. Oh.
How limiting was the NDA? I mean, it sounds like it was limiting on not just who the project was, you know, for, but also all the little aspects of the project. You know, what did that
thing?
Everything.
It was everything. So, and it was technically there too. I looked this up afterwards. I'm like, are you really? Can a public elected official be bound by an NDA that he or she didn't have any awareness of, nor did they sign? That is, and also I couldn't. What about a conflict between me doing my job as a public official for my constituents and then having to like take into account the, you know, the corporate or company interests? That's just not what I signed up for, and it seems like that's a constitutional problem. But the NDAs, which were, there are two of, as I said, one was signed by the predecessor to Beal, and then it was sold. I guess any contractual situation that exists, from the precursor is passed to the, you know, to the current development team that bought it. So it was in effect, and it went into effect in June of 2024. I mean, literally almost 11 months before I had any idea that this project existed. And the NDA really ruined everything, because even up to a few days, 7 to 10 days before June 17th, I think it was, we were really expected not to even, you know, acknowledge this, not to name anything. I never knew about Amazon, by the way. But that, like, that is really difficult, because when you have folks in the community who are looking at this information, and I was really happy to speak publicly about the aspects I thought were really helpful. You know, this is a cloud-based processing set of data center. Proximity to cloud processing makes it more efficient. My gosh, we have massive sectors, Raytheon and aerospace and all these federal contractors who would be very well served to have proximity, greater proximity to one of these types of cloud processing centers. And like, that could keep them here or keep them expanding in this area. There's so many things that we could not really talk about because of the NDA. And then the worst thing is it undermines public trust in local government, because then they think we're all hiding something. And it's just, with what's going on at the federal level and everything going on in general, I just think it's the worst time ever. People are understandably sensitive, and I heard that very clearly from, you know, reading my Instagram, and also, you know, unfortunately, the very, very distressing, you know, public forum, because actually there's multiple, that was not very useful for people to get the information out, because we were, again, being told that NDA was something we had to adhere to up to days before the meeting. If we had, say, 90 days, 120 days, where we could get more of that information available, the energy and water usage info that my team and I asked for right away, and we were not given, you know, the reclaimed water pipeline plan, all that other stuff, the infrastructure investments, why it's such an important type of data center to have in our area, at least one anyway, in our area, because of what it could mean for other industries here expanding or not leaving us. All of that stuff, nobody could talk about. And in the lead up to a government approval process, I think that hurt everyone. It made us look bad. It made us look like we were withholding things, and in some degrees we had to. And it also wasn't good for the development team, given the outcome, right?
And you, the county can obviously rezone or sell land in a situation like this, but you can't provide the water, because that is Tucson Water.
That's responsible
for that, and they own 90% of the reclaimed water, for that matter. And you mentioned that you felt as if the mayor knew quite a bit about this process. It seems like the city would have had to have been involved for years as this project moved forward.
So my team and I, we walked out of this development meeting. I was really refreshed, because, as I said, I'm like, I was not expecting to have such a, you know, environmentally focused. I did not expect to meet a water expert with this data center development team. It was great. But we asked all these questions too, and I wanted more information. And I said, okay, we've heard from what TEP is saying, what the development team is saying. TEP said, I want to meet with TEP leadership myself. And we did. I want to meet with the director of wastewater management. Is the effluent potentially coming out of this parcel of land is something that is treatable safely for the county? Because that is what we do. We don't do the potable water. We do the wastewater. I asked to get a meeting with Tucson Water, which is City of Tucson. I reached out to, I believe it was the city, I think it was to the chief of staff for the mayor, to be respectful, because that's not a Pima County thing, and ask if it's okay with them if we have a discussion. And you know, at the time, you know, not a public discussion, but that was something that they facilitated. So I did meet with leadership of Tucson Water, and my team did, and just to kind of, again, trust but verify, right? I did quite a lot of homework on this before I just, you know, voted on it. So, but that was something that I hearing from them on the reclaimed infrastructure, and hearing from Tucson Water, it was, again, very reassuring. I know they've been talking with the development team for the better part of a year, if not more. I mean, the original NDA was signed in June of 2024.
So it seems like there was a disconnect, at least between what the city council knew or were seeing, and versus what was actually happening sort of behind the scenes at the managed city manager's office at the development, and also with conversations with you. I mean, do you have a sense of, you know, why that happened? I mean, it seemed like during the meeting, the city, there was some real questions about this kind of thing kind of being moved through without really the city council having a great idea of exactly what this project looked like and what this project was going to mean until it was already, until we started writing about it.
I mean,
the media, I mean.
I will just say I don't believe anything, no actions were taken in my estimation by any staff of any member of the city council or the office of the mayor without the full knowledge of those members or the mayor. That is my firm belief. That's my knowledge. So, I don't have a great explanation as to how things went down at the city, but they were all very well aware of this project and intimate details of the project for frankly much longer than I was. I first was made aware of this in whenever that meeting was in mid-May. That was my first exposure to this. But we, of course, took our action many weeks before this came to the city council. And then, of course, they got some more specific information as to energy usage numbers as well as water usage numbers that the Board of Supervisors never had it at our disposal. So, and remember, this is a multi-phase process. We did the land sale. And that was kind of it. And then rezoning in anticipation of annexation. And then knowing that, of course, the development agreement would be something that is done with the city of Tucson and their development team. You know, that gave me I knew that my vote for or against, my vote for this was a land sale. That was it. You know, this was not going to be just instantly done. It was going to go through a heck of a lot more, public education approval process at the city. So I knew that was reassuring to me that there it was that additional step at the city.
Great. Hey, Matt, let's take a break real quick. And yeah, when we come back, we'll talk about the RTA.
Congratulations to KVOI's own Hall of Fame broadcaster Bill Buckmaster, who's been nominated as Best Radio Host in the Tucson Weekly's annual Best Of competition. To vote, just go to TucsonWeekly.com. Voting ends August 28th. So cast your vote today and help Bill Buckmaster win Best Radio Host. And catch The Buckmaster Show every weekday at noon on 1030 The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk. Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show here on KVOI, The Voice. Sitting in for Bill, I'm Paul Ingram from the Tucson Sentinel. And joining me here in the studio is, Green Things Zocalo Village Studio is Jim Nitzel from the Tucson Sentinel. And we're also joined on the phone by Dr. Matt Heinz, who's the Pima County Supervisor for District 2.
Hey, Matt, I wanted to follow up on one last question with the Project Blue and data centers before we move on to the RTA, and that would be the future of data centers, because there's still interest in building one here, right?
Oh yeah, there is. I don't think we've heard the last from this development team, or at least some portion of this development team. There are so many reasons why it makes sense they would want to be here, and again, some reasons in terms of our own industry in the area that we would want a limited, very environmentally conscious few to potentially develop in this area. Now, look, it's something that can be done on private property. What about federal land? What about tribal land? It doesn't have to be a county parcel or a city parcel. So I don't think we've heard the last from this industry, from this kind of development in this area at all.
One thing I think that struck me is how many of these data centers are in the Phoenix area, and how quickly they've kind of been set up without a lot of kind of, you know, public fury. And, you know, when they come here, all of a sudden they're running into this problem. Do you really just think in part maybe that this particular one was just sort of mishandled, or maybe that Tucson just really doesn't want this industry here? Or do you think there's a way to make this palatable?
I really do think that, and I know this because I don't do this on a regular basis, but I have been getting quite a lot of Instagram hate, and you know, once or twice a week, I will pick a person and I will just literally talk to them, me, not my staff. I will talk to them and say, I would be happy to have a respectful conversation with you about why I voted the way I did and why I think this could be a good project for this area with the correct kind of environmental stewardship, you know, barriers and protections in place. And everyone I talk to, I'm not saying they're all of a sudden a huge fan, but they understand why I voted the way I did. They understand the potential impact for the region, and that they do understand that there is a different way to do this. And what a great paradigm shift if we can have a project like that developed here, and we're like, okay, the last project said they'd be water positive. How much more water positive are you going to be? All right, well, the last project said they're going to accelerate our clean energy profile for our local power producer. How much faster are we going to get to 100% renewables if you develop here? I mean, that's great. I love that. So if something can succeed, and those are the kinds of discussions we're having, that's good for, frankly, that's good for the economy, and that's good for the environment, and it's really good for a lot of, frankly, everybody.
Was the way this process went down a setback for those kinds of conversations in terms of renewable waters and renewable energy?
I wouldn't say it was a setback. We had some artificial constraints, right? I mean, I started putting the message out there. Remember, when I was admonished for violating the NDA, there was a footnote, and it was, thank you for your comments. The team appreciated them. Like, wait a minute. So I'm subject to an NDA, the NDA, which I just violated several times, and you weren't actually upset. You were like, huh, that did okay. And so by being so just closed off and hyper secret and trying to have an NDA those 90 or 120 days right before a government approval process, I think that really was kind of the development team shooting themselves in the foot, because it would be great to have those contexts out there and to set the, you know, to set up that kind of messaging and get that, make sure that people, before they start overreacting to things, and I understand why they did. They did not have that information. They did feel like they were being having stuff withheld from them, and to some degree, that's true, including from public officials like me. So I want the I think it's not necessarily a setback overall. I think that we can all learn from how things go or don't go in terms of the next process. And I hope that any future team like this, maybe the same one, will learn that, you know what, we're going to do community outreach starting 10 months ahead of time, 8 months ahead of time. You know, there's a lot of trust to be rebuilt here because people had such a negative response. But a lot of that came from, again, having either misinformation or no information. And so others filled in the gaps. So I think that it's been a learning experience, as I said.
Sure. Thanks, Matt. We're going to take a question. Mary Ellen, you have a question here for Matt Heinz?
I did not go to the meetings that they had on the Blue Water Project. But my question is, when they are telling us we don't have enough water for those kind of companies, no matter whether it's Tucson or the area, Arizona, if it's all true what they're saying, no matter where those kind of companies go in, they're going to be using our water supply tremendously.
Thanks for your
and
question.
And I just want to know, where can they assume that they're going to have enough water in the desert? They need to go to where there's more water supply.
Thanks for your question, Mary Ellen. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, no, that's true. These are because of the nature of the way these data centers work. There's water cooled towers of servers of processing of power there, and that is true. It's going to be water intensive wherever it's located, and the vast majority of these are located in other places. But you can't have 58 or 60 of them up in Phoenix, right? I mean, they do locate in arid or semi-arid regions as well. And in this process, one of the things I found the most impressive was their commitment to not only using reclaimed water, which I acknowledge is still water and part of our overall water supply, but you know, not diminishing our potable water supply in any way, and then a commitment to work toward charging that aquifer. Not something, I mean, that would be the first water positive data center in the country that I'm aware of, and so. I acknowledge everything that Mary Ellen said, and I agree with that, and water is a huge concern for me. But between having development teams focused on that and finding ways to be water neutral or water positive in these kinds of developments, that is, I think, a huge step forward, because that's not something I'd ever heard of before this particular project. And the second, kind of a corollary to all that, in my research about kind of this water-intensive process, the technology, and we're not quite there yet, but the technology for the cooling, the specific tech for the actual cooling process, is becoming much more efficient in terms of cycling through multiple, you know, using the same water multiple times to cool the same area and that kind of thing. And I don't pretend to be an expert here, but the actual amount of water that we will see being used in these kinds of data center developments going forward 2 and 3 years from now, for example, because of those technological advances, we're going to see a much, much lower water use profile as well.
Let's move on to the RTA. I mean, you're on the board of the RTA as of earlier this year. And last week, y'all voted to move forward with a $2.6 billion transportation plan that would be funded through the half-cent sales tax that we currently have for RTA projects. It's been a complicated journey, I think it's fair to say, while putting this plan together. But you were one of two people who urged the board to hold off on having the vote next March. The Board of Supervisors that you sit on will have to agree to put this on the ballot before September 10th in order to have that March election, and you said it should wait longer. Are you concerned about the timing of the election or the way the plan looks right now, or both?
I have some concerns, and actually in both. It's a little spendy, just the package itself. It's largely based on the working draft for the 20-year RTNX plan that was generated under the leadership of the prior executive director. But look, we have to be careful here. It's $100 million more than the pessimistic outlook, and there's no general contingency. And I said this in the meeting. That bothers me because the first RTA, we're looking at $1 billion. That's with a B, right? Like $1 billion short. $550 million of that was just not, we didn't get in the revenue that we thought based on Elo's projections back in the moderate projection back in 2005, 2006, largely due to population growth, not getting to 4 million. So, but we never once in the entire 19 plus year history of the first RTA, we never brought in the revenue we thought we were going to. So that's, and then of course, pandemic and inflationary pressures and expenses kicking up another 450 plus million in terms of what it's costing us to complete things. Now, we're off by a billion, no one's fault, just stuff that happened to us, right? People understand that. But what we can do, and I believe what we are responsible and must do, is to be just really, really hyper-focused on fiscal responsibility to make sure that we're looking at the pessimistic outlook. That would protect us from maybe 300 million of the 1 billion that we were off. So, but also let's not throw in 100 million more dollars and two or three more projects, named projects that have not been seen publicly by the CAC, by the committee process. Let's not do all that stuff at the 11th hour, because what we need now is to work and rebuild trust in the community. And I think another 8 months pushing this to November instead of March, another 8 months would really be a great thing for us to reopen the CAC process and ask for the community, not just going to the community and saying, here's what you got. This is what we threw together last night in a RTA blender, sprinkled in some extra things for various jurisdictions and done. No, not an education campaign, but an input campaign. That, I believe, 6 to 8 months of that will really help us to rebuild some trust in this entity and the board of directors for the RTA, and help us to get something that truly everyone in the community understands and really likes and is excited about, so that we don't have to worry about it not passing in March, which I'm very, very worried. What we're kind of playing chicken with regional transportation. And the electorate has made it very clear that they are not happy. They feel insecurity from an economic standpoint. We saw in my district, Saurita, having a property tax override fail, I think 60-40. And of course, Prop 414, a very long, complicated ballot measure at the city of Tucson level, which I supported, but lost 70-30 when initial polling was showing it going winning 70-30, or at least before it went to the ballot. So the electorate is telling us something, and I'm a student of human behavior as a physician. We need to listen and pay attention. It's not a good time to throw a hyper-complicated thing at the voters with what looks like a new half-cent sales tax. It's a continuation, but it doesn't say that on the ballot, does it? That's not how it's going to show up. I'm just really worried about the ballot construction, some of the components, as I mentioned, fiscal responsibility and timing, because to lose in March, I don't know what that means. That could set us back years in terms of this transportation program.
And in terms of your role as a member of the Board of Supervisors, when this would, if assuming the RTA, your colleagues on the board move forward with asking the supervisors to put this on the ballot, would you be likely to vote against that as a member of the Board of Supervisors, or is that more of a ministerial vote?
You're right. That is ministerial, and I think if the board didn't do, because in statute it says the RTA Board of Directors has the authority to submit this to the voters for their approval and consideration. And I was, as a legislator, sued by Governor Brewer because the Republicans were in the Senate, I think, they were not delivering the budget to Jan Brewer because she was going to veto it. And so they just kind of held it in the Senate or something. That was back in 2010. So this is a ministerial duty. And that was what the court said then. And to me, I'm, you know, unless it's, if they had not done any public input, if they had, you know, not adhered to some part of the RTA statute, and our own lawyers at the board were saying, of supervisors were saying, wait, this does not pass muster to pass to the voters because of X, Y, or Z, that's a different story. I don't anticipate we're going to have that issue. So assuming that everything is in proper form and order and all that, then I will vote to forward it along to the voters as a supervisor. I'm just hoping to prevail upon my colleagues as my fellow directors and the board of directors for RTA to just take one more look at the timing of this election. And truly, we can figure out, frankly, I think we have plenty of money in the RTA bank account. We can figure out a $24 million 9-month gap in transit funding between, you know, the time when we are going to temporarily lose that TPT income until November's election. What we can't do is rebuild everything. If this goes down in March, then what are we doing?
So, well, what would be the plan B if it goes down in March? I mean, what would the RTA be able to do?
What I had been saying a little bit publicly, look, we as the Board of Supervisors can pass unanimously 5-0 a half cent sales tax. We've never done that as a county. Most other counties in the state have that to some degree. I don't know about half cent, but they all have that authority. We could temporarily fill in for that RTA assessment if the voters do not approve that to continue for that 9-month period of time, for example, or even longer if necessary. But that does require a unanimous vote of the board. I do believe I'm willing to do that. This is such an important issue. And I believe all four of my colleagues would also be willing to do that. I know we heard some different things from my Republican friend and colleague, Steve Christie, but I think the pressure would be so tremendous from, and understandably so, from advocates for transit and public transportation, and also the business community. And, you know, we want this program to be able to sell to businesses looking to come here or stay here or expand here, and to have that fail would have tremendous and negative economic consequences. So I believe in that emergency situation, which it then would be, I believe the pressure will be sufficient to get a kind of a stopgap temporarily through the Board of Supervisors. But I would really like to not waste $3 million of taxpayer money to go to the voters when we are maybe not going to want to know what the answer is, you know.
Right. Matt, thank you very much for your time. We're going to take a break. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for talking to us on the phone. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you have a good one.
Yeah, you have a good weekend.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rieto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show here on KVOI 1030 The Voice. I'm sitting in for Bill. I'm Paul Ingram with the Tucson Sentinel. And joining me here in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio is Jim Nitzel, who's also with the Tucson Sentinel, and he's our brilliant government and politics impact reporter.
And we have a lot to talk about with politics, but not much time.
It's been fun, I think, in the last couple of weeks. We have a very, very close election that isn't really solved. Can you tell us some more about it?
Yeah, the Ward 3 election primary, Democratic primary between Kevin Dahl and Sadie Shaw was decided by 19 votes, which has required a recount in that race. But the recount is now on hold because Sadie Shaw, who serves on the TUSD school board, has started an election contest. She's filed a lawsuit in Pima County Superior Court to try to call for a new election because there was a blunder by the Pima County Recorder's Office. They sent over a list of voter names and political parties that was incorrect. And so a number of voters in Ward 3, we're not quite sure of the number because we're having trouble getting information from the city clerk's office, initially received the wrong ballot, and there's some question of whether they were supposed to get a Republican ballot, but they got a Democratic ballot, or vice versa. They wanted a Democratic ballot, and they got a Republican ballot. So this is something that's going to be sorted out in court. We did reach out to the city clerk's office to try to determine how many of those ballots were cast, how many people got a new replacement ballot, how many people didn't vote at all among that group of voters, and how many was it?
And do we have an idea of how many votes are up in the air right now?
Right. In the lawsuit, Sadie referenced, I think, somewhere around 75 ballots, and she has since said she thinks the number could be north of 100. So again,
that makes the difference.
It's certainly more than the margin in the race. So were voters disenfranchised? That's what we need to determine. And I think that's what's going to be unveiled in court on Monday when we have our first hearing in this case.
And so how long can this draw out? I mean, this is for the primary, right? So then we have the November election. So we have to have this done before then, right?
Yes, we do. And the ballots for the general election are supposed to be printed in early September. So there's not much runway here to resolve this. And if indeed we get a new election, I don't know how that works, given that, you know, is it a snap election that we're going to have in a week? Or, I mean, you'd have to print new ballots for that election as well.
So and this would just be inside the one ward. We wouldn't do it again in the city. We just have to do it just in
in that ward. But you still need to print ballots and set dates and announce an election and all the rest of that. So I guess we're in uncharted territory because I haven't seen something like this play out before.
That's quite remarkable. I mean, so, you know, 19 votes is sort of, I was sort of struck by this. I mean, that's sort of spectacular, but this is only in the ward. There's also going to be the citywide election later in the year, right? And we also have, what else?
I think a Plan Tucson is on the ballot as well, but I don't think, you know, it's very rare for a Democratic challenger to unseat an elected Democrat. If they're appointed to the office, sometimes they don't have as much luck. But an elected Democrat hasn't been knocked out of office in a primary since 1987. So it's been almost four decades since we've seen someone prevail in such a race. And Sadie certainly tapped into a lot of discontent against Kevin Dahl in that ward to come within 19 votes. and still have these lingering questions.
So without the, there's that in politics. What else is happening next week? I feel like there's a debate.
There is a debate. Congressional District 7, we have Adelita Grijalva going up against Republican candidate Daniel Gutierrez in the race to fill Adelita's father's seat. Raul Grijalva held that seat for a for more than two decades, since he was first elected in 2002 until he passed away in office earlier this year, and has triggered this special election. The primary is already over. This is a district that leans heavily Democratic, and Congressman Grijalva rarely had like a significant challenge to his race. It's tough. I think the betting odds have about a 3% chance of a Republican prevailing in this district if you go on one of those political betting markets.
Sure. So
the Daniel Gutierrez, who ran against Grijalva in 2004, certainly has his work cut out for him in managing to pull off an upset here.
So can we just give our listeners just a quick, like, how many elections are they going to have before the end of the year to vote in now?
We're past the special election primary and the Tucson primary. We do have the special election general coming up in September 23rd, I believe is the date on that. And okay. They are going to meet in a debate that's going to be on AZPM, carried on the Sentinel website. And then after that, we're going to have the general election and maybe a redo of Ward 3. We'll see. And if there's a redo of Ward 3 primary, I guess there has to be a redo of the Ward 3 general, because you're not going to be able to get that all put together in time for the November election. And then RTA coming up in March of next year, unless Matt Hines can prevail on his colleagues to call the whole thing off.
I think that
car is moving a little too fast to apply the brakes at this point.
I think voters should get their blue pens ready. They're going to have a lot to do.
They do.
A lot of bubbles to fill out.
They do.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate your time. Thanks for talking to us today.
Always a pleasure, Paul. Thanks for the invite.
Congratulations to KVOI's own Hall of Fame broadcaster Bill Buckmaster, who's been nominated as Best Radio Host in the Tucson Weekly's annual Best Of competition. To vote, just go to TucsonWeekly.com. Voting ends August 28th. So cast your vote today and help Bill Buckmaster win Best Radio Host. And catch The Buckmaster Show every weekday at noon on 1030 The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk. Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It's time for Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive, presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Start your planning now for your enchanting getaway in the land of enchantment. Silver City and Grant County is an easy 3-hour drive east of Tucson. There's a ton of stuff to do there, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness and hanging out in historic Silver City. There's more at southwestnewmexico.org. You know, there's a great paper there. There's a Silver City Daily Press and Independent, which prints, I think, 4 days a week. We're here with Weekend Watch with our sister station, The Drive, and with Leslie is here to tell us what's going on this weekend in our neck of the woods.
Yeah, so tonight is another $5 Friday at the Tucson Botanical Gardens. It's such a beautiful place there. This is going on through September 26th every Friday. It's only $5 to get in there and walk around. If you've never been there, definitely take advantage of that because mm-hmm. it's absolutely gorgeous. And if you've noticed the traffic increase, U of A starts school on Monday, so a lot of people moving into the dorms and stuff. And they're actually doing a college day out tomorrow at Park Place Mall. They're going to be, you could climb a 25-foot rock climbing wall or compete in a scavenger hunt. They're giving away a $300 shopping spree grand prize, which, you know, for college, especially the parents are like, we could use that.
Oh, truly.
So that's going on at Park Place Mall tomorrow from noon to 2. And happy birthday, Tucson. Right? We just turned 250 years old. They're having a big block party at the Tucson Museum of Art that's happening tomorrow night. It is free to attend. There's going to be performances, food and drink, and they're going to have highlights of the city's histories, demonstrations, and more. So I think that's going to be kind of a really cool event. And something that I love that they do. Have you ever been to the Sabino Canyon night tours?
Yes, definitely.
They're love fantastic. Those. Yeah, so they start at 7:30 in August, but starting in September, they're going to push it back a little bit because of when the sun goes down. But they take you up along in the dark, up to the stop 9, I think. You can see. I just love it. It's so beautiful. It's only $15 per person. Recommend highly to get advance reservations for that mm-hmm. because it usually sells out, and I definitely want to go. If you want to do some shopping, Old Tucson Saguaro Sunset Night Market happening again tomorrow night. That is happening from 6 to 9:30. I've heard great things about this, about mm-hmm. how many vendors are out there. There's food, live music, restaurants, and it's free to attend. And you know their parking lot's huge, so
sure.
you won't have a problem
it's
with that.
It's always great this during time. There's always this like sudden... a bunch of events all of a sudden in the fall. Suddenly there's things to do.
I know. It's starting to come back. We still have Summer Safari Nights going on at the zoo. I think it might be in either ending this weekend or next, but like Cool Summer Nights at the Desert Museum is definitely is going through next weekend. So you have few
so
chances
one more
to
weekend.
Do it. Yeah,
okay.
One more weekend to do that. So yeah, you could have your choice of many different things going on this weekend. Yeah.
Great. That sounds fantastic. I mean, it's such a great weekend. We get lots to do. Thanks for having and thanks for coming in and talking about
these
things.
You're welcome. And I think they took rain out of the forecasts for the weekend, so boo.
Maybe a storm will pop up.
I know, because I've been to the Desert Museum during Cool Summer Nights when the storms mm-hmm. come through. It's stunning. But
it's certainly gorgeous. It's always gorgeous to see the storms, especially the Desert Museum, because they have that long vista out towards the west.
Yeah, yeah, well, we can watch the storms, but you know, we haven't had many of them. I did have rain last night, though, at my house.
I did, too.
So
I was really surprised.
I was excited.
Thank you for talking to us today. Appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. You, too.
All right, and this was the Bill Buckmaster Show. It was produced by Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for its content. Thank you again for our executive assistant, Rosemary Brandt, and to our team here at Boostus Media Tucson, including engineer-producer Tom Fairbanks. Have a wonderful and safe weekend.